Hello, and welcome to the first installment of the Psychology Podcast, sponsored by the Texas Tech University's Department of Psychology.
Everyone wants to look good. With the media industry setting the standards on what it means to be beautiful, it's pretty difficult in today's society not to occasionally have feelings of being overweight or unattractive. How we should look is everywhere. You know, women are thin and often outrageously airbrushed in the magazines and such, whereas men are muscular and toned. So the question is, where does that leave the rest of us? Well, many people choose to diet and exercise regularly, but sometimes people will often take staying healthy to extremes. Things like depression and anxiety and low self-esteem are associated with not living up to our society's standards of beauty and can lead to eating disorders, with the two main ones being anorexia nervosa and bulimia nervosa. Eating disorders are most prevalent among adolescent girls and young adult women, and it would be rare for a woman in her late adulthood to begin having an eating disorder unless she had one previously. Now, even though body dissatisfaction and overexercising can occur among men as well, women with an eating disorder outnumber men roughly 10 or 20 to 1. Needless to say, though, negative body image and unhealthy eating practices need not to be taken lightly. Now, I'm joined right now by Dr. Jim Clopton, licensed psychologist and faculty member here at Texas Tech University, to talk about issues relating to eating disorders. So what are some factors that may contribute to an eating disorder?
One thing that makes eating disorders very hard for many people to understand is there are a whole variety of psychological aspects that feed into eating disorders. Young women who are depressed are at risk for a variety of other problems, and eating disorders is one of them. A lot of people in our culture are dissatisfied with the way their body looks, and that's a factor in eating disorders.
What makes it so hard for people to deal with eating disorders?
I think the hardest thing about an eating disorder is a lot of the ideas that a young woman has with an eating disorder make sense to her. She looks in the mirror and says, "I'm not thin enough." And as a counselor working with someone like that, your temptation would be to try to argue with her or convince her she's wrong, but she's certain that she's correct. One reason that the treatment sometimes takes as long as it does is there's a danger if you treat a person just very briefly and then stop that there might be a relapse. These are severe problems. Anorexia leads some women to extreme measures that bring about their own death. The mortality rate in anorexia is higher than it is in depression.
So what are some warning signs someone should be looking for?
One thing that I think people should look for in the early stages would be someone who is preoccupied with appearance, preoccupied with weight. But I would think for a college student, if a young woman had a roommate and that roommate was bragging about how little she ate, or when they went down to lunch together, this person saw her roommate eating two crackers and calling that lunch, that those would be some of the danger signals. I think that a lot of times people see things like that and after the fact say, "Oh, gee, I knew something was wrong," but sometimes they're reluctant to say something to the person, "You need to get help," or to say something to somebody else like a counselor in a dormitory or something like that.
Well, Dr. Clopton, thank you for all of that. Next, we are privileged enough to hear over the phone from Pulitzer Prize-nominated author Maria Hornbacher. Maria's book, Wasted, is an ever-so-honestly written memoir about her personal struggle with anorexia and bulimia. Now, Maria, what can you tell us about your experiences?
Well, I developed eating disorders when I was about 9 years old. I was one of those people who started very young. I was just a kid, and I had become obsessed with the notion that I was fat. My life was very much out of my control at that point. There was a lot going on. I was a very sad little kid. I was very lonely. There was a lot that had gone wrong in my life, and an eating disorder sort of emerged as a coping mechanism that I could use to make myself feel safe. And I went from about 90 pounds to about 52 in the space of a year. At 52 pounds, I was hospitalized. I went for, about 10 years in my eating disorder where I was actively rejecting treatment and rejecting help and rejecting recovery to the point where I got so sick at about 19 that recovery began to seem like something that really was going to be not only desirable but necessary if I was going to survive. This stage, I've been struggling with eating disorders for 23 years, and at this point, my body is fairly significantly damaged, even though in the last, whatever, 12 years or so, the eating disorder has come in and out of remission, and I've really been engaged in active recovery. The irony with eating disorders is they are the safest thing in the world to someone who has them, and of course, they're what's going to kill you. It's hard for people with eating disorders to conceptualize that. It's hard for me to conceptualize that. But, you know, I have no choice, and I really have to work my very hardest to try and maintain some management over my eating disorder.
From listening to what you had to say, I have to admit that your experience with your eating disorder reminds me a lot of addiction.
You know, eating disorders or alcoholism can get triggered by any number of things, but the treatment of them over time and their continuation over time has everything to do with addictive behavior. Eating disorders are physically self-propelling. The more you starve, the more you want to starve. The more you starve, the more you want to binge and purge. And so in the same way that alcoholism, once you take a drink, you want to take another drink, that same self-perpetuating mechanism is in place in eating disorders. Over time, the sicker you get, the worse your body image gets, the more deluded you really are about how you look. Like even when I was 60 pounds, I would look in the mirror and I would see places on my body that I thought were fat and that needed to lose weight when, of course, I was skin and bones. I can't make myself see differently. I can't change my body image. And, I mean, it's one of the most disturbing aspects of eating disorders because it's so far from reality. You know, it's delusional. You can't see yourself accurately, and that makes it very difficult to recover.
How would you suggest dealing with, let's say, a friend who you suspect has an eating disorder?
Well, I would sit them down first and try and approach them about it as openly and honestly as I could and say, you know, look, this is what I see. I'm not judging you, but this is what I see you doing. It's upsetting to me because, and then, you know, talk about the reasons that it's affecting your relationship with them, the reasons that it frightens you. And just talk very much from your own perspective without being didactic and without being judgmental. Usually what will happen when that happens is that the person with an eating disorder will completely reject you and try and alienate you. When you see that someone does want help, you can encourage them to see the counseling office on your campus. When you do that, if they don't choose to do that, you can go to the counseling office on campus because while you may not be able to help the person with an eating disorder, you need to get help with staying sane yourself. And people should not be trapped in a situation where someone is just dying right next to them and they feel helpless and they feel like they ought to be helping, but they just can't. The first thing you do is you take care of yourself.
Thank you, Maria, for sharing all of that with us. To read more about Maria's experiences, pick up her book, Wasted, published by Harper Perennial. It is an amazing read. Please, everyone remember that an eating disorder is a serious life-threatening condition, and we recommend anyone in such a situation to seek help from a physician or counselor. To learn more about the Texas Tech Psychology Podcast, please visit www.psychology.ttu.edu. This podcast was produced by Dr. Frank Durso, edited by Paul Derby, and relayed by myself, R.B. Watts. Stay healthy and active, and have a great day.